This is Kenny Williams with Introduction Mastermind from Street Cop, and I'm here with Mike Brazil, teaches Indiana case law, Ohio, Michigan as well.
Yep. For now, hopefully adding more in the future, but right now that's what I got on the calendar.
Awesome. So today we're going to talk about Indiana specific. It's unique to Indiana. It's called PIRTL. It's a PIRTL warning. It's very comparable to kind of Miranda in custody and interrogation, but this is in custody and asking for consent to search property. Often on the interdiction world, I get the question of, is PIRTL needed during traffic stops? There's a lot of misconceptions and misunderstandings in our state pertaining PIRTL during a traffic stop. During an average traffic stop, you do not need to read them PIRTL when you ask consent. Mike will cover this more in detail in a little bit, but that's kind of what we're going to touch on. Maybe we'll touch on a little bit of when PIRTL would pertain during a traffic stop. And on the average traffic stop, Mike might have the case law with him to support when it's not needed. But we'll go into there. We'll start with that. And you can do your thing, Mike.
Yeah, so PIRTL is, like Kenny said, it's in custody and asking for consent. It mirrors almost exactly Miranda. The same types of things that constitute in custody for Miranda are exactly the same for PIRTL. And also that average traffic stop is not in custody for PIRTL. It's the same Berkemer v. McCarthy that said that a traffic stop isn't in custody for Miranda. Meredith v. State for Indiana says the same exact thing. It quotes Berkemer in the same thing, saying that it's just an short in length and that somebody knows that it's going to end soon. So there's no in custody because they know when they're gonna be leaving. The other thing that PIRTL talks a lot about and the subsequent cases to PIRTL is that the scope of the search is unlimited. So when you have a limited search, say for SFS teams or DRE or DNA swabs, things that like that, PIRTL's not required to give consent in those specific consents. So they know exactly what they're consenting to. It's more of a protection of giving just general consent to go in and search a whole vehicle, a house, things like that.
So with that, when did PIRTL come into play in Indiana? Do you know the year? I'm not sure.
The year, I can tell you in just a second.
Are you looking it up? Why do you think there's a misconception with it? I just don't understand. And it seems to be unique that the Northern Indiana are right with the current case law when PIRTL applies. And then for some reason, like Southern Indiana, they're misunderstanding it.
Yeah, I don't understand where the misunderstanding came into play, because us being up north, we've always known it to be in custody and consent. It's been spread around from at least through my classes that I've been told is that prosecutors are assuming that anytime somebody is detained, they're not putting the in custody requirement. They're just saying they're not free to go. That means PIRTL applies. And it's just seems to be spreading from down there. But PIRTL was issued in 1975. So it's been around a long time. And I remember going through, even back as pre-basic before going, I'd be talking about PIRTL. So I don't know where the misconception started. Somebody, I believe, would be a defense attorney started bringing this up and kind of scared prosecutors into thinking, well, now we just make sure, be safe, re-PIRTL, trying to push that issue because somebody brought it up as a reason why consent wasn't valid.
That's what I was going to say. I remember PIRTL being brought up, but I don't remember there being such a hard issue about it until maybe the past 5 to 7 years. And seeing the clear divide from like north to south when it comes to PIRTL, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I, like you said, 5 to 7 years, I hardly ever got any PIRTL questions, come across anything that was PIRTL related in filing charges with our prosecutors here, just looking over reports, having any instances with some of the officers not using PIRTL or something. I've never had any issues with it. And then as I've been teaching the case law classes for street cop going down south, I've had 5 to 10 questions per class come up about Pirtle, and they're saying that they're hearing it from their prosecutors and have been just pushed into it, that they need to be reading it more often and in times where it's not even required.
When it comes to traffic stops, do you think that, you know, say our average traffic stop 7 to 10 minutes, do you think there would be an issue where you need Pirtle if the traffic stop for whatever reason turned into a 20-minute traffic stop and then you ask for consent without Pirtle? Or say you're waiting on backup, and as you're waiting, before you ask consent, 7 cops showed up, and all of a sudden now you tried to ask Pirtle. In either of those situations, you think Pirtle would apply?
Yeah, I think that's where you're coming to that edge to where Pirtle's going to apply, because somebody's going to think they're not going to be leaving soon. So that's the difference between not free to leave in a detainment and then arrest-like circumstances where somebody thinks they're going to be gone for a while. So once that traffic stop goes over that 10, 15, 17 minutes, wherever is the normal traffic stop length, into that 20-minute area, 25-minute area, somebody in their mind's thinking, there's more going on, I'm not leaving here, especially a criminal is going to think that because they know what they have. So at that point where they're going to feel like they're under arrest-like circumstances is the point where we're going to have to re-Pirtle. And along with that is when more and more officers show up, the same circumstances apply. You know, if it's 2 or 3, it's kind of similar to just a regular detainment, because that's normal that you might have backup or a second backup. But if multiple ones now show up, the person's going to think that they're going to be going to jail, be transported, things like that, be put in handcuffs, things that would constitute arrest-like circumstances. And at that point, I would recommend to re-Pirtle and all circumstances once you're reaching those thresholds where somebody's going to feel like they're under arrest and they're not leaving soon.
Do you have some of the case law that supports that? I know I have, you've given me them in the past. I have a couple of them.
Yeah, if you have some on you, I don't have any right on top of my head.
95 Jones versus State. Ruled that, you know, you don't need it during a traffic stop. 2006. Selmer versus State, and then 2001 Lockett versus State.
Okay,
those are the ones that you give me that I kind of, when people ask, I have them saved, and I just kind of push them out so they can do the research themselves. Knock on wood, the fear of me, like, it's not even a huge thing to me. I don't think Pirtle in the long run is going to deter if we have to do it on every traffic stop. But again, I don't like to, if the court starts seeing that this is the way that everyone does it here and then not here, they're going to just make everyone have to do it because they feel, I don't know, in my eyes, they're going to feel like, obviously you don't know what to do, so we're all going to have to do it on every traffic stop now. And I don't think that's going to deter most of us from, you know, asking for consent. I just don't feel that we need to be giving them, the courts like that. If we know how to do it and we just interpret the laws the way they are, we don't need to restrict ourselves even more. And I feel like with such a clear divide from north to south, eventually something's going to have to go where the courts are going to be like, they're going to have to make a decision one way or the other. Are we going to have Pirtle read at every traffic stop, or are we not going to have it read at every traffic stop? And I feel that we just need to understand it a little bit better. If prosecutors are down, obviously, in order to be consistent, all of us across the board in the state.
Oh, exactly. If we're all doing it different, like you said, one way or the other, it's got to go. Either they're going to have to come out with a case that say, and they do, they have the cases. The ones you mentioned along with Meredith say you do not need to read it during a traffic stop. But the more and more they keep pushing it that officers read it, especially down in the South, and they're reading it more, they're going to question why we're not doing it up here. And eventually we could lose that where they're saying, no, during any stop, we're going to have to read it. And that's why I think it's so important we get this out there, that it doesn't need to be read, that we need to talk to the prosecutors to the officers that need to talk to prosecutors that are down south where they're being told this, and show them the case law where it's saying we don't have to read them Pirtle, or we don't have to advise them of the Pirtle rights during a traffic stop. Because if not, we're just going down that road where sooner or later it is going to change and it's going to be much tougher. Not that we won't still ask for consent that consent isn't the best option to go. It's just, it's going to make it more difficult guys and girls and what they're doing out there.
Is there any, I think Pirtle for me is the biggest misunderstanding case law in the state. Honestly, like I think that that's, I get the most questions about it. And then again, like half the state does it one way, half the state does it the other way, or the prosecutors anyways. Is there any other case law that you can think of that's unique to Indiana that is similar or that is often questioned?
No, Pirtle's, I mean, obviously Pirtle's the one that gets questioned the most, what I get the most questions from. And it's weird because, yeah, it's most confusing to me because of the questions that keep getting answered and just the different ways it's being applied. But it's most simple when you think about it in the same terms as Miranda. But fortunately for us in Indiana, we don't deviate much at all from the SCOTUS standards of what they put out. You know, there's a couple cases we differentiate a little bit from the Brinlin and Arizona v. Johnson cases where a passenger is free to leave. In that case, Waddell was the original one, but it was superseded by Brinlin. But then Indiana brought it back and basically says that once you make your initial approach and figure out there's no officer safety concerns or further reasonable suspicion, you have to let a person leave if they request to leave. So that's the only other one that really differentiates, and it's not really that much at all. I can't think any others off the top of my head that do. We pretty much follow the federal lines of Fourth Amendment case law.
So given that we'll talk about that one a little bit. So given that case law right there, so just an average traffic stop, if someone wants to get out and walk away but if you have reasonable suspicion, you're able to keep them there, correct?
Correct. Yeah. If you have reasonable suspicion, they're not going anywhere. And if they jump out immediately, they're not going anywhere. Also any kind of officer safety concerns, you're not gonna go anywhere. So it's just in the instance where it's a regular routine traffic stop where nobody's acting abnormal, you have no further reasonable suspicion. After that, if the passenger's like, hey, I don't want to wait around for your 5 minutes to write a ticket, you have nothing on them, you're gonna have to let them go. The case that says that is Eaton v. State. It was decided in 2018.
I have a question with that. So in regards to the officer safety aspect, if Indiana's majority rural, if you're by yourself and there's multiple occupants of a car and you're conducting your traffic force, what do you think the courts would rule in that situation? If you're trying to keep them contained instead of having people outflank you or do other things, I don't know. My officer safety would be, I can keep them and see them all in front of me or wherever you're going to place them. If they go have the freedom to go wherever they want and I'm by myself out there without backup for the next 20 minutes, I feel that
precisely what they're wanting you to articulate. It's not going to take much. It's just going to say, what is your officer safety? Other than just saying, for my safety, you start saying you're by yourself, you're in a rural place, there's two or three of them where easily can outflank you, could sneak back up on you, things like that. Once you articulate that, I mean, you got night, you know, time of the day, you know, what kind of neighborhood are you in? Are you going to allow people to go where they're going to quickly be able to go get other resources, things like that? It's just an articulation, like a lot of things we do. It's just how you articulate it. I don't think it's going to take much. It's just saying that we can't flat out say, no, you can't leave.
Good. That's good to know. Well, this is going to be a short podcast, but I just wanted to cover some of those things. And I think that we did, and hopefully people hear it and maybe some prosecutors decide to listen to this so we can all be on the same page. Again, yeah. This is Mike Brazil with Case Law Midwest Area and Kenny from Interdiction Mastermind. Appreciate you guys joining me. Have a good day.
All right, you guys have a good day.